if you have wireless keyboards or big screen TVs or anything that you can bring to the open day, please bring it and talk to me, because we really need them for the gaming mini cops day. Over to Rusty Russell, who's going to talk about West Knot.
So, I'll start with the true confession. I forgot I was presenting the Game Mini-Conf. And last night, as I returned from the speaker's dinner, I thought, oh, great, I have some slides to prepare. So this is going to be a little bit more bitsy than normal, but I really like that, because I feel that's part of Mini-Conf tradition. Really crap. So, we're going to go through a little bit about West Knot to start with. I'm hoping that we'll fill in some time. And then we'll talk about why I got involved with the project, a little bit about the code, and then some of the things I did. And then I'll cap off with a bit about the politics and the people about the project social infrastructure. Okay, yes. So. This was a trailer that was written independently of the project. Someone just said, you should have a trailer. And someone else went, that's a good idea, and actually just hacked it up. Nothing to do with West North, just this guy who thought, yeah, let's create a trailer. This was the 112 trailer, so it doesn't completely reflect the latest version, but hopefully the on display. Oh yeah, so it's really good. As you can see, shit. Right, I tested that it worked on my laptop, and I didn't see it.
Don't worry, we have to use it. I'll talk a little
bit about this terminal there. So anyway, he created this trailer, which actually does a really good explanation of what the game is. It's a very blue kind of game. I've never really seen this before. It's a glow thing, right? Because it spits out a whole lot of mirrors. Just... This type of shot, right?
G-string.
So what was it that whoever it was gave it out of property?
You still have M-Player running?
That's right.
Do you still have M-Player running?
Nope.
Not anymore. Here we go.
Close them.
Let's try this again.
Yeah, that might work.
This is even less prepared.
You choose.
Yes, the year of the desktop.
He's an expo.
In the VO.
Where's Kim Becker?
He's not the VO.
Now VO's
in the blue. Yeah, VO's in the blue.
It looks really good on
the This is hilarious.
Yeah! I'll play it twice. I recommend you read the text once.
Let's make
a tempo. That's Zoom. I'm just happy it's working.
It's working.
It's solo.
What is it doing now?
Show you where the enemies can reach. It's called Show Enemy Moves. It's in my fingertip anyway. And it will highlight all the hexes, all the places the enemies can reach. And I had one piece, a critical piece, that's just there, and I went, okay, they can reach there, but that's that guy there, and he cannot kill him. so I'm good. End turn. A piece comes from way over there. Comes and killed my vital piece. And, yeah. Which, of course, is such a tragic thing, because then I have to, like, reload the save game. But it pissed me off, because the show enemy moves just highlighted on the map where they could reach. It didn't actually say how many units could reach. Now, of course, it wasn't my mistake. It was a bug in the game. So, I dived in and created a little patch. So it turned out that May 2005 was leading up to the freeze for 1.0. And so, that patch basically went nowhere. It was the freeze. Before I talk about that, I'm going to talk a little bit about the code itself. 100,000 lines of C++ code. Who here likes C++? That explains why people do this. Okay, so it's a big hunk of steaming C++. It's uses now a Subversion repository. That's been shown from CVS to Subversion, while the rest of the world is switching over from Subversion to, say, Mercurial or Git. They use an SDL, and what's interesting is it runs on Linux, Mac OS, and Windows. I'm not doing all of that. We usually put Windows last. So it's very different to actually not be able to test stuff, on the one hand. So Windows people say it breaks, and I go, does it? you get the whole cross-platform thing. But on the other hand, when you compare this to coming from the kernel world, like, people send in bug reports with save files attached. And you replay and you go, oh, that's the problem. Like, it is so easy. Use a debugger, right? If it weren't in C++, it would be trivial. So, but also, you actually get some really, really cool bug reports. I remember one bug report. There's an option in the game to have shrouds, so you can't actually see places you haven't been. And it also turns out, someone had reworked the shroud code a little bit, there is a unit in the game that casts light, and so there's a little halo around them wherever they are. Well, it turns out that while the shroud code carefully made sure it didn't actually render the unit itself so you couldn't see under the shroud, you'd see this halo. There are not many cool kernel bugs like that, so... November 2005, freeze lifts and show enemy moves goes in. Okay, so at this point I should be happy. The code wasn't particularly clean, which meant that it fitted with the rest of the code. I wasn't entirely happy with that. But one thing that did strike me is that it must be really, really hard to balance a game like this. There were some parts of the campaigns that were a little too easy, and there were some parts of the campaigns that were a little too hard. I actually know someone, she started playing and she got to the siege, which is about, I think, the sixth into Heir to the Throne. Sorry?
Yeah. I dropped out there.
Yeah, and...
Everyone takes to play
it, it's just, yeah, it's really hard. And I thought, you know, we really need feedback from these people. I mean, occasionally someone will post to the forums or jump on IRC and say, I'm having a bit of time with this. And so you get some kind of feedback. But it's such a fragmented group. And you'll never find the people who dropped out and never came back because they hit some, you know, something or tuned it wrong. And someone said, oh, well, maybe we should tune for newbies so that every campaign, like every scenario in a campaign can be finished even if you have absolutely nothing. But no, that is the stupidest idea. Do not confuse beginner with 3-year-old. Because even by the time a beginner has reached like the 12th scenario in the campaign, they're no longer a beginner. You really do need life stats. So, okay, well, let's hack something in to upload some stats. So, I hacked this patch up that would actually upload to a central server and save off relevant information about the game in a text file, which it would then upload to the server. And then I needed some way to display it, and I thought, well, SVG is what kids use to write graphs these days, so I'll learn SVG. So I learned all this SVG stuff, so I wrote some C code to turn the graphs to SVG, and I also figured I needed a database, and I really, you know, it's been a long time since I've been database stuff, so it's like, okay, well, I'll learn some SQL as well. Anyway, so I, long story short, we had a server, which is held together with Perl and Gloom. Actually, it's Shell and Gloom. This is stats.wesnoth.org. You can see all the campaigns. This is actually 1.2.1, which has just come out, so we don't have any games available. But you can click on previous versions and get stuff. Now, I did this beforehand because, basically because it's a shell-powered web server on the other end of this, it's horrifically slow to put the graphs out. But if we click on one of those links, here we can see the stats. This is how much gold people had at the start of each scenario in this campaign, which is South Garden, on normal setting. Everybody starts with 100 gold. That's why that dot is so big. You know, the cumulative area of a dot represents the number of people inside it. So just, and this is, and the SVGs is clickable too, so you can click down on that dot. If you want to find out like what's wrong with this person, you can click on that and you can see the history of that particular person's gaming. And you can see, you know, why are they having so much trouble here. But you can see like the range kind of spreads out and then everybody sucks about here. They go back to zero gold, right? It kind of baselines there. Kind of comes through. But this is again a concentration. In fact, 7A and 7B are two options. Obviously most people choose 7A rather than going to 7B. Sorry?
Scroll it up.
Scroll it up, okay. I'll just scroll it up. So that's gold at the start of the game. So yeah, you can see most people actually go this way, not that way, same here. And there's the end. So if you're a campaign designer, this stuff is invaluable. Because you can look at this and get some idea of where people are hitting trouble. Losses quits shows you where they're actually dropping out.
How's that expressed?
Sorry?
How's that expressed as losses?
Just the number of recorded games that where they lost and quit at various points. Okay. You've pretty much got two ways of exiting a scenario. You can four ways. You can lose, you can quit, you can win, or you can crash. So the percentage of turns used on victory, most of the scenarios have a turn limit, you've got to do something in a certain time. It's often quite contrived, the story writer's gonna go, no, we must get there before winter, which is in 24 minutes. But for whatever reason, they usually have a set turn, so there's a time limit or a turn limit on it. So you really want to see how much, what percentage of the turns they had available did they use? I mean, do we need to bump that up a bit? Can we cut it down? This is interesting. Total minutes per player. So for each scenario, how much did that player, in total for the games that they play, spend? I don't filter outliers, which is a problem. Like the person who took 160 minutes on this one.
I think he was AFK.
You should probably read the stats for Heirs of the Throne before you start playing it, particularly the total minutes per player time. It's up there, right? And even if you discount the people who obviously left it on overnight, you still end up with... This one's actually not too bad. That's the average line. So we're looking about, 30 minutes, 40, 100 minutes to get through that. So, significant amount of gameplay time for people to put in. And then we have the count of level 1 units. You know, your units have levels as they go through, they get more advanced. Everyone has a certain number at the beginning. Some of them get more, some of them get less. It drops over time because, of course, now they've got more level 2 units. Let's see, level 2 units. And a little bit south. Obviously, no one's got them at the beginning, then, you know. And this is particularly useful because rather than saying, I have no idea what the state they're going to be in, you can say, I know they're going to have this many level 2 units at this point. So if I want to change things radically, I can test with that scenario. You know, they have about this many level 2 units, this many level 1 units, and this many, no idea about how many level 3 units they have. Okay. The way you access this is there's a little... When I first implemented it, there was a nag screen. When Wesnoth first came up, it said, would you mind sending stats to Wesnoth at all? And people objected to the nag screen. I think the nag screen is actually really important.
The sound is wonderful.
Nag screen is actually really important because you want a statistically valid sample. You want the people who give up after after half an hour. You actually want to find that information out. So bugging them up front is probably the best way of doing it. Of course, there was no consideration that we would ever do it without asking people. Can anybody find the send info button on this page now? Who hasn't actually seen the send info button before?
Probably
If you highlight over the middle of it, it opens up. Get this. Blah, 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 rely on feedback, etc., etc. And it gives you a URL, which unfortunately isn't cut and pasteable because of the SDL widget set that's being used. But yes, if you were to write that number down and put it in. The only relief is that they have the same issue on Windows. If you write that number down and put it in, you will see the stats of all your games that have been uploaded. And yeah, this is basically a random number that's generated with using various factors. So it's, unless you give it to someone, it's almost impossible for them to trace, for us to trace who someone is, which was a pain in the ass when somebody started uploading crap games for a scenario they were writing, and they ended up creating graphs for these people with stuff everywhere as he was obviously testing it. Fortunately, googling for the name of the campaign that came up found the author, and we told him to turn off the summary uploads. So that's a summary upload stream. As a result, we've got quite a lot of really useful information back for the campaign designers. Oh, that's what I was going to show. If you click on either one of those dots in the SVG rendered version, or you go to your particular URL, you'll see something vaguely like this. Firefox's rendering of SVG is interesting. This is Bay of Pearls, Isle of the Damned, whatever else. This is really old information. Green is a win. Here, somebody started and just obviously started and quit immediately. First, they started and quit. What's that? Oh, yes, this is the number of turns through. So they've obviously loaded a... They're loading old games. They loaded a game that turned whatever in, and they went, nah, screw that, I'll go back a bit further. Loaded it, went, screw that. Third time lucky. Or maybe they played one scenario, no, that didn't quite work. Quit immediately. Then they got here. Green means they got through. So they finished with probably one turn to go. Next time they went straight through. There. They got to the next one, started and went, if I complete the last one better, this one would be easier. So they went back and tried a few times and ended up loading this other game, obviously, up here. Then they kind of, this is me. they slanted their way back and forth on the siege. This is the siege. That's just the one where everyone drops out. And then we actually died here, which is quite impressive. We failed there, we failed there, we quit there, we quit there, we failed there, we quit there, and we succeeded. Woo! On a real graph, that, you know, this is usually, you know, fail, succeed, fail, succeed, fail. And the graph is squished, it has to fit in that, yeah, we tested it pretty small. Anyway, the point is, we eventually succeed, we get through here, we fail, we go back to the beginning, we succeed. Go to this one, we fail, we go, if I'd done the last one better, I'd get. So we go back to this one, a little bit more polished, whatever, okay. This is the point, I suck at this game. I'm actually really, really bad. It does have a multiplayer network mode, which I used for the first time when I had to debug a network problem in the Wesnoff code, because I fear other people. They're nasty. So... So the stats turned out to be really useful for people, but quite an interesting challenge to have there. Okay, so then I'm on a roll. This was what got me commit access to Wesnoff.org. They're like, cool, you're doing good stuff, you're learning C++. And of course the bugs arrive from the show Anything Moves. Not because these had anything to do with me, but I was the last person who touched the show into the Moves code, and therefore anything with that string in it started getting assigned to me. So, units can be invisible, they can be cloaked in certain environments. And what would happen with show into the Moves, it would say, okay, so this enemy, where can they move? Well, they can't see, and normally they couldn't see your invisible units. So it calculates it as if, like, ignoring your invisible units. But you're the one asking the question, and you can see them. So you really want to say, you can see my invisible units, now what can you do? So it's an obvious coding bug, we fix that. All good. Okay. Well, all right, it's kind of a dead time, to, you know, December, January, so it's fun to hack on random things. And there's this issue. Okay. You have unit A and unit B, they're fighting each other. A is going to attack B. A has 9 hit points, which means it can take 9 points of damage before it dies. And it has 2 attacks, each of which do 60% damage. The train leaves the station, and yeah, that kind of question. 30% chance to hit. Okay. Unit B, they have a little bit more hit points, but it has 3 attacks of 4 with 50% chance to hit. Now the AI needs to know the answer to this question. Should it do this attack? What's going to happen? And it would also be nice for defensive weapon selection. You often have a range of weapons that you can choose. And it would be nice if it chose the best weapon under all circumstances, rather than using your pea shooter against the cannon that you're facing. Okay. So, turns out the AI simulation code ran the fight 50 times. And then used that result. Yeah. Somebody on IRC.
Is the AI actually any good in this game?
Something. The AI is actually surprisingly good, given some of the tasks it's got. There are tweaks that are possible. I'll come back to that later. Somebody said to me on IRC, "Yeah, but it can't be calculated faster." Relax, everybody. I'm a Colonel. I had no idea what I was getting into. This hurt my brain more than just about any damage attack. This was a saga. This was multiple all-nighters, really fiddly debugging. I ended up writing the whole thing in C and then moving to C++ because I had a language I could understand. This is the problem. This matrix represents the possible number of hit points. Unit A has 9, unit B has 12, and we know that situation. It's 1.0, everything else is 0. Probability matrix, straightforward. Okay. Now, first unit A is going to attack, do 6 hit points damage, move some number of this into here. Since it's got a 30% chance of hitting, therefore, 30% of that number ends up in here. So this represents unit B is still fully healthy, but unit A down on 3 hit points. Simple stuff. Then unit B attacks. 50% of each of those numbers gets shuffled upwards. At this point, there's still a 35% chance both are unscathed. Okay. This gets a little bit more complicated because A gets its second attack in. So we take 30% of this number and pop it on that number. But first we take 30% of that number and pop it on that number. You've got to iterate backwards, otherwise you get weird, weird bugs. So we carry it across. And by the time you fit unit, like you can't go below 0 hit points, so you're dead at this point. 4% chance of here, 4% chance of here. Okay. And then again, unit A gets attack number, it's unit A gets attack number 2, so B's hit points are changing, and we copy stuff upwards, do an adding fold. Now, at this point, I actually get an A, 3 attacks, that's why this worked out. Okay, so A, which I've decided, is now going to have 3 attacks, and B's going to have 2, so we roll it up. Okay. We then add the columns to figure out the summary. It's the B summary. B has an 11% chance of being dead. Oh, the other thing you notice is that when we did this, this one didn't move up. Dead people don't fight.
What about the undead units?
They're vanquished, Unless you have a necromancer nearby. A necromancer.
So 11% chance that A's toast. Actually, B. 11% chance B's toast. 11% chance A's toast. I was doing this just out in the hall before. And the numbers didn't add up, because these should allow up to 100%, so should those. My first attempt, they didn't to give it. I think they could write a program to do this or something. what's interesting is the chance of B coming out unscathed, and this is only 16%, whereas it's a 49% chance that A would come out unscathed. So we use that information. Now, it's not quite that simple. Okay. That only took me a day to come up with. Many units have multiple choices on what they can use to attack. And the choice... you have long and convoluted debates about what is the best thing. Like this one's got a 51% chance of killing them, but a 60% chance of doing nothing, or a 40% chance of doing nothing, and this one has a 50% chance of doing it, but a like a 45% chance of doing nothing? Yeah, that kind of question. Anyway, this is the answer. Screw it. I stopped asking people after a while, because I got all these different opinions. You take, firstly, you look at the chance to kill, because that's usually the priority. Get rid of the other unit. Look at your chance to kill times by minus the chance of you dying, multiplied by some weight. If that weight is zero, it means you don't care about your own life. If your campaign designer would set that number to negative, it means you'll be actively suicidal. And you'll get bug reports that look extremely strange in these great replays of people just throwing themselves. If they're actively choosing the least damaging weapon. Took me a while. If that's kind of a wash, that number ends up around zero, then you start looking at the average damage, okay? Maybe we can't kill them, or maybe it doesn't really matter. Who did the average damage? Minus the average harm, and eventually you just end up going, well, let's just go for the greatest damage. Sometimes the damage and harm go up together. So, that's the algorithm we use to check it, to decide what attack to use in the AI. The problem is that for every weapon you could choose, the defender could choose a weapon. So to really do it, you have to go, okay, for each attacker weapon, first, let's simulate each defender weapon to figure out what the best one is, and then we go, now, is that the best for the attacker? No, and then we go around the next one. So it's actually n squared to figure this out. Okay. But...
wait.
The game isn't that simple. And perhaps if this code had been written at the same time as the game was developing, it would have stayed simple. But there's a thing called drain. If you have a draining weapon, when you attack your opponent, half the damage you do comes back to you as healing. Okay. That's pretty easy, because if we look at our graph... you go the right way. Look at our graph. All it means is instead of just going doing damage to them, we go damage and then we go half the way across, thus. So you end up shifting everything. It does mean that you can end up with more hit points than you started with, obviously not more than your max HP. If you're already damaged, you can come backwards. So that we can handle. Berserk. You just keep going until somebody's dead. That's pretty easy. You just keep iterating. And your magic just keeps going towards the edges, and eventually...
one dies.
Well, the answer to the problem is that you'll never get to zero in this case, because there's always some possibility that you both are going, in 24 hours. So, because we usually only care about accuracy of 1%, within 1%, when there's 99% chance that somebody's dead, we stop. Swarm. Somebody added this while I was writing this code. I said, wouldn't it be cool? Like, what if it's like a cloud of bees or something? So, kind of, as you do more damage to them, they get fewer attacks. Right. We can handle. It doesn't get recalculated during it, so how much you start with. So we just figure that out to start with, and that's almost okay. Slow. If you hit your opponent, from now on, the first time you hit them, they do half the damage that they did before. Okay. You think that's easy? If this guy here... So, if you're in this line, you haven't been hit. But if you're in this line, then you'll only move, do half the damage, so you only move half the distance this way from here. Except, what if you've got drain as well? They've got slow, so they hit you, so now you're damaged. But then you hit them, and you get it back. So you can't actually use the number of hit points to indicate whether or not you're slow. You end up with up to four layers of matrices representing the slow state of perhaps both opponents, if they both have slow. When we did this, you couldn't actually have slow and drain. But having the swarm experience led me to implement something that could simulate everything. So you can have slow. 5 minutes? Oh, good. Okay. So that turns out to be okay. So we implement all this. But the AI actually wants rolling simulations. What they really want to know is, if I attack with this one and then this one, now what will the answer be? How is everyone going to turn? And then this one, and then this one, after chatting. Well, you just feed the initial matrix back into the next attack. Except for swarm. So now you have a variable probability of each attack happening. At the beginning, you've got a 100% chance of making their full number of attacks. The second time, they might have taken some damage, so they might have fewer attacks. So you multiply in a factor for each attack, and so you keep up to attack profile of how many things they've got. Anyway, After a lot of experimentation, and then attempts at optimization, and then bug fixing, and then more attempts at optimization, turns out that floating point units are not expensive anymore. Fixed point calculation of this was slower, and obviously hairier code, than just doing it on the floating point. Like using 16-bit fixed point didn't win us anything. That FPU sitting on your machine doing nothing while using fixed point might as well be used to do your floating point and you get better accuracy. Note, generally Wesolf doesn't use floating point because it's a network game and both ends are supposed to get the same answer. Some people don't run the same architecture as other people or in the same modes as other people. And we had a bug originally where right on the borderline, the simulations come with different results. Particularly, the attacks the simulations used to detect to check which weapon you should be using would get enough different. You end up completely out of sync. Very, very good. Okay. So, 1,100 lines of my hated C++ later. We had an attack simulation. We saved those 50 cycles, and it was only marginally slower. I lie. In the corner cases, it can be slower, but generally it's much, much faster. To do the, and you get accurate results. But the cool thing about this was not only can the AI use it, but if I now load my test game, okay. This guy here is a berserker. Right, so he will attack until dead. So if I take my little useless unit here and attack the berserker, it shows us we have two possible attacks. It can't defend against this attack, so it gets 0-0. But what if I try to attack with my staff against its berserk 7-4 melee? Not a good idea. There is a 2.2% chance that I won't hit him at all. And at best, I'm around that 34 hit points, and I'm toast. Okay. Do it. No, I need this. Okay. A normal unit is pretty straightforward. This unit drains. That one. There is a good, I don't know, 18, blah, 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 a good 30%+ chance that I'm actually going to heal them. But it is important that the AI know this. Also not okay. Okay. And we used to have this funky green colour if you got poisoned, but we lost it. So this is kind of a more normal attack. It used to turn sickly green because this guy has poison, so if you get hit with this green, that's why the chance of being unscathed is important. Because if they've got poison, they hit you once, you're then poisoned, and you'll lose your points later. Now, people complain that it looked like an angry fruit salad with all different colours, so we simplified. Red is dead, green is good, yellow is...
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna... Yeah. Okay. Cool. So that was the shiny. Okay, around the time I wrote something called Heirs to the Throne using that wonderful tool, Sed. I'll give you a name, Heir to the Throne. I went... Talking with Beer, and I thought, well, if it's an experiment, we took Heir to the Throne, which is about this boy who goes around and kills things and becomes king, to invert the genders and make an heiress to the throne, and have a girl who goes around and kills things and becomes queen. And it was just a little experiment, and Amanda Penrose, I don't know if she's here, did some artwork for me, because of course now, you know, I couldn't just. If woman to man be easy, just put a beard on it for me. So we did that, and of course there was actually an interestingly violent reaction by some people in the Wesnoth core team. Firstly, because of course it doesn't fit with all the rest of it. There's like a story to Wesnoth, and this one didn't fit if the genders were out of the but as an unofficial campaign, it was actually quite an interesting thing. Somebody said, we need a new tutorial, the tutorial sucks. And Dave White, head of the project, said, tutorial has always sucked, we've always said somebody needs to rewrite it, no one ever does, let's just ditch it. And I'm like, we can't ditch the tutorial. I mean, it's great for existing players and developers, but everyone who wants to get on the first run probably wants some kind of soft landing. So like, how hard can it be? Yeah, almost. almost as long as the attack prediction code. Right, freaking tutorial. But now we actually have a tutorial that doesn't suck. And this is actually quite a useful thing. And the one thing that took over from Heirs to the Throne is at the beginning of the tutorial, you can actually choose what gender you want to be. And I even had to fight against that. I'm like, look, some people are going to associate more with one gender than another. I'm not particularly saying that they will identify with their own gender. Right? So we should actually bring that from the beginning. I've been trying to push that into that kind of idea into more campaigns. There's actually no mainline campaign which has a female lead in Westeroth. Because all the developers are bullets. And I actually think it would be really interesting to... I'm going to refactor Heirs to the Throne into a side thing about the princess who actually comes out as kind of a narky character in the original one. Well, sympathetic, perhaps. Okay. Very, very briefly about politics. In the kernel, we don't deal with musicians. artists, no, not even translators. We don't have deep conversations about how do you translate the difference between fighter and warrior in a language, like what is the difference? Some of the poor translators have to deal with this. They use these web forum things. I had never seen one before. It's like mailing lists, IRC mobbing. Mailing lists are actually very rarely used. The commit mailing list is the main one, and there's a developer mailing list that is occasionally. But most of it is IRC and these forum things. That's actually where most people hang out. It's particularly, this is a bit of a line between the devs and the musicians and artists. There was an earlier thing about, at the Gaming Miniconf, about licensing. We have had licensing issues with musicians who go, you can't modify my work. Particularly with artists who've left the project over work modification, the GPL requirement, of course, we modify the work. Because there's a very different culture between code and some of these other things, where it is seen as very individualistic and not a contributor or kind of thing. In fact, the artist I got to do some of the Heirs to the Throne stuff, Amanda Penrose, originally said no commercial, and I said that conflicts with the GPL. I pointed her at the why people should sell free software spiel that is on the FSF site. I think perhaps it opens some eyes. You know, people who are earning money aren't necessarily bad, as long as they pay the license. Churn. It tends to be the game people get enthused, they do a couple of patches, and they drop off again. Like me, as you can tell, my dad's pretty old. Leadership. David White, who of course is in Australia, founded and led the project through to 1.0. And then he went, I've finished. I have told my story. I've gotten the game out that I want to make. And said, you know, I'm going to take a back seat. And this creates a vacuum. And what it means is that when you really want to say your code sucks, rip it out, you don't have the authority to do so. And you don't really have anyone to appeal to do it. It's actually a really noticeable problem. Because the project... People are actually doing cool hacks, but as far as nobody's going to really take to the next step, because nobody has that, this is where we are going anymore, which we did for 1.0, it was like, this is where we're going. So 1.2 is a refinement, better music, better graphics, stuff like that, but I don't expect to see another quantum leap, because there isn't that focus and direction anymore, which is probably fine, that's probably a good time for you to leave. Okay. That's the end.
It's actually been afternoon tea for about 10 minutes now, so feel free to run away.